Namaste. So we have been tracing some of the key aspects of Sri Aurobindo's yoga. We have heard the word that it's a yoga of transformation. Now Sri Aurobindo has used the word transformation in a very specific sense. He himself clarifies that transformation is not some change of nature, because this word is commonly used nowadays. Feel good. Transformation is not when I sit a while for meditation, I begin to feel good. It's very common experience. That's not what is called transformation. Transformation means that now that is our poise. It's impossible for me to be like that. Let's take an example that a child can sometimes think like an adult. It's wonderful sometimes when you hear some things falling from lips of children, you wonder. Child is the father of man. But he goes back to his childlike state. But when you are grown up, it becomes impossible to be like a child. Unless you want to just play, that's a different thing. Because your consciousness has changed. So this radical change, which changes the entire understanding. Now when a child says sometimes very profound things, it's not necessary that the child has understood. It's something which has touched from inside, above. And it makes wonderful. You know, children sometimes describe that I felt so peaceful. But then they go back to their life, which will have its own evolutionary curve. But transformation is not just some change of consciousness. The word used is a reversal of consciousness. And a change that endures. It changes completely the way we look at life, understand it, act, react, feel. Everything changes. And there are successive transformations. So first thing is that these transformations, each of them leads to a reversal of consciousness. Now let's take for example, what is a reversal? Typical example, in ordinary life we are preoccupied with what? Food, dress and our bodily condition. This is what is the common preoccupation of most of, 90% of humanity. Time to time there is some turning towards something higher, deeper, but there also the preoccupation is again with these things. So, these time to time touches are not enough. But let's say for example that some part of the being has got transformed. This is a psychic transformation, for example. Then the whole value system changes. Then the whole preoccupation is with, as we read in the prayer previously, let's say for example that how my being, how much is it surrendered to the divine, how much I have given myself to the divine, how much is this nature manifesting or expressing the divine, and it becomes impossible to go back to that state when we used to think about ourselves, our body, our this, our that. It becomes impossible. In fact, it becomes painful. It's like a vast sea. You're trying to push it into a small, narrow, little vessel. After a while it becomes extremely painful, almost a struggle. Whereas ordinarily this is painful to enter into a state of vastness. So this is the one change, for example. With the psychic change comes bhakti, devotion, faith. They become the stuff of everyday life. A day spent without thinking about the divine feels like a useless day. A day when you have not done some work for the divine seems like a waste. That what a horrible day it was. I didn't get anything with which I could serve. So these are stages through which we pass. But when there is this psychic transformation, this complete love and faith in the divine, even if all the appearances are to the contrary. Take for example that ordinary also people say, yes, yes, we have faith, we have belief. Everybody has faith and belief in everything else. But it needs just a little virus to shake everybody's faith and change it into fear. But if there is a psychic transformation, not a drop of fear is going to enter you. It will become impossible. Why? Because you know that life and death, everything is in the divine hands. What does it matter? You are conscious of your immortality. So death holds no fear. In fact, you wonder. Sometimes you wonder that why is there so much fear about death, which is a non-existent reality. Now for you it is non-existent reality, not for everybody. For everybody is the last final reality. But once you discover the psychic being, you are one with it, you are conscious of your immortality. So there is no fear of that kind. You look at all this as a play. Even if there is illness, there is all kinds of things, they will be there. It's not that, oh, once I have the psychic realization, I'll have no issues, problems in life. No. You have to go through the challenges of nature. It's part of the evolutionary journey, which is not yet complete. But inwardly, you are free from that. You are in a state of joy. You are in a state of peace. As we have said, that example of Amrita having a heart attack, and somebody went and asked him, Amrita, you had a heart attack, I believe. Amrita saying, no, my sweetheart is giving me some trouble. This is the difference. For somebody, oh, he has a heart attack. Amrita had a heart attack. Everybody is going, my God, what a problem. What a big thing. How did he have a heart attack? Our heart is made of the same substance. But he is inwardly in a state of beatitude, state of surrender. That is the big change that takes place. So it is not a feel-good factor that for some time I feel very nice when I meditate and then, my life is still the same. I see people, I have done this yoga and I have wonderful experiences. And after that, they have a big biodata which they write and send. That as if to impress. If you had a radical experience and realization of the psychic being, you realize the utter worthlessness of all this. You realize that, being a postgraduate or PhD and all this doctorate and all this is so absurd, meaningless. It is all certifies your ignorance. It simply means I don't know, but I have got a degree that I am a knowledgeable person. Like Ma Anandamayi, when somebody went and told her, Mother, some Vidwan has come to meet you. Such a big card with all the degrees. That time it was still the card, now it is biodata. And Mother Anandamayi says, Avidya ki nagari mein vidwan kahan se a gaya? It's a complete change. See, it's a psychic transformation. She used to go into bhav samadhis. So, Christian mystics used to experience psychic transformation. So, it is that. Then Sri Aurobindo also says it's not sainthood or ethical man or, our conventional idea of transformation. No. It is the appearance of new possibilities and new faculties. Spiritual transformation brings new possibilities of thought. And there he gives another example that normally we have to labor. You have to give a talk or you have to present. Teachers know this. So they have to prepare. I don't know what they prepare. Teachers teaching the same class for years. Still they prepare. It's a good thing to prepare. It's good if you have to prepare because after all, you should do a good work. But if there is an ascent of consciousness and a progressive spiritual transformation, then you won't need to prepare. Because what you need to know, you will know. When you need to know. What you need to know, when you need to know, that you will know. Now here again there are stages of conscious ascent. There are times when you will have to concentrate to know. There are times when knowledge will rush upon you about anything that you seek to know. It can be even the most mundane and material object. It depends on which side you apply it. So if somebody doesn't apply onto the material field, you won't. Because again there will be many aspects of this inner change. So that thought changes, the heart begins to change with the spiritual transformation. The love which we have for ourselves and my near and dear ones, kith and kin. I don't know what is this word, kith and kin, pith and pin. Mere apne, apne to apne hote hain. What kind of narrow thought celebrated as deep emotion. But with this spiritual transformation, your heart will become so wide, it will become impossible to feel like that. Of course, you have people in your life who may be outwardly also connected to you and is wonderful. It's not that you have to prove a point, but you will begin to feel a vast universal love which embraces all that comes within your all that comes within your atmosphere simply because it's something that is coming from the divine. So this is the change that begins to take place in the heart. Similarly, to act with any personal selfish motive will become impossible. It's like you will feel paralyzed even if you want to do it. A simple act like filing an income tax return so that you get benefit will be impossible because it's like thought won't come. Because it's it'll become impossible to act like that. But instead, your actions will be driven by the breath of the divine. So, of course, you have a personal aspect of existence. By that I mean outer aspects of existence, which have to be taken care of, and they are taken care of. And as we read in the prayer, that it needs just a little, you have to just apply a little bit. When she's arranging common material objects, and she says that it's enough that I pay a little attention to it. But to act with a personal selfish motive, much of this in the world goes on in that, you know. Even there are people who collect a lot of chanda, yogis. Why? I'm not for myself, for this philanthropic work I am doing. You won't, it will come to you if you need. If it is really work given by the divine, it will come. What you need for your personal needs will be taken care of. That's how such people are taken care of. There is a verse in the Gita, Yoga Kshem Vahameham. When those who become my minded, my lover, lean upon me, I look after them, all their needs. But otherwise, we are always preoccupied. So all this begins to change, the motives of life, the way the heart or love functions. Sweetness will be a response to even people's anger and hate. It will become impossible to hate, to be angry, because you know it's a different state in which you begin to live. Even what may appear like anger is not anger, but an intervention to throw away something which you can see as falsehood within and around you. Thought will begin to change into a more and more intuitive thought. And then, of course, there is the final supramental transformation with which even the outer nature will change. In supramental transformation, there are not even subconscious movements. Before that, there will be things in the subconscious, in the environment, will tend to come back, either in dreams or by triggers or when there are certain situations or circumstances, because yet there are possibilities. Shubhendu describes that in Book 3, Canto 3, House of the Spirit and the New Creation, where he says, last and mighty transformation came. His soul was all in front like a sea. And that is the time Ashwapati makes the great sacrifice. He tore desire up from its bleeding roots and offered to the gods the vacant place. But till that stage, that's the last supramental transformation. Till that stage, these things will come. Occasional desires, this, that. But you are able to separate. You are able to let them pass. And you know that this is not what you are. So these are the steps and stages of the triple transformation. The psychic, which comes by discovering the psychic being within, the inmost soul. And discovery is the first step. And letting it govern our life instead of the ego self. What happens to the ego self? It becomes an instrument. It becomes very thin, like a little vapor. The ego doesn't disappear with the psychic realization, but it becomes very like a thin, like it may feel the prick and little hurt, but you know it's the ego, and next moment it's gone. It's like a line on water. So it is there. The ego self doesn't vanish, but it becomes very thin, like an instrument. It's like a snake without poison fangs. Frightening, but no fang, no poison. That's how the ego becomes. Then the ego goes by the experience of the self and, you know, the divine. That takes long time. But meanwhile, the spiritual transformation means we begin to operate from higher and higher states of consciousness. The higher mind, for example, which starts showing everything in a symbolic way. The illumined mind, which starts shedding a light, which discriminates very instantly about the truth of things. Then a more intuitive mind, revelatory mind, where there are flashes of revelation, intuitions, where now that light which was falling from somewhere and showing things is within us. It is there as part of our sight and insight. That is spiritual transformation. The last is supramental transformation. And with that comes the ultimate change and also eventually at some point of time, the conquest of death. Now the point that we need to understand, important thing, that there is nothing like an individual transformation, because it's the evolutionary process. And you have to, there is an interdependence between the individual and the world around. So the moment you enter into this process of spiritualization, the being expands and begins to include all life around it. So Even if you try it, it won't be possible. This was the question Mother and Shurbindo when they met together, and should we first try and have the realization first? Shurbindo said, no, it's impossible, because as we grow, we include others. So now you see, our own change becomes interconnected with the lives of those who are around us. So at one level, it also means to be careful of who are those around you, unless you have become like a big oak tree. But even then, one can be, you know, like Shubhinda and the mother called all kinds of weirdos and all kinds of people, like all of us, you know. Now, they are like that ultimate sun. But even when you have outgrown the stage of that initial care, but one can never be careful enough, still one must know that there is an interdependence. So there is nothing like an inner, alone, solitary transformation. It depends upon people around. So it's a collective process. But certainly there are individuals who will be little more ahead, and individuals who will be connected, who are together. But this little ahead and little behind is something like you are traveling in a big, huge ship. Somebody standing on the keel front says, I am ahead of somebody who is standing behind. We are all in the ship. It also means that some people will take a greater share of the burden and some will be taking less. It's okay. Now, some who are developing more will take the greater share of the burden. So they are doing sadhana not only for themselves, but for others. Not that they are consciously, oh, I am doing sadhana for someone. No, not like that. Spontaneous. Natural. And whatever they are receiving is spread into, again, that collectivity with whom they are linked. Even if it's not about, you know, even if somebody is isolated, your consciousness is going to expand. You can't help it. So this is the most important aspect to understand the collective nature of yoga. So beyond a point, our progress will depend upon the whole collectivity coming up. And that's why the mother says that the labor should be twofold. What is it? One is progress, inner progress, your own progress, but also the progress of the collectivity. She repeatedly says the double labor in this yoga, because then only there will be a total progress. Otherwise, it will always remain tied, at least in this yoga, which is a yoga of evolutionary transformation. So this collective and the individual, both will go together and have to be taken into account. So we'll stop here for today and continue this further next week. Thank you. Namaste.